From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, January 5th, 2017. And on this day, Maine legislators will decide once again whether to make changes to mining rules to jumpstart the industry. And as the popularity of bean boots grows, so does L.L. Bean. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The Maine Board of Environmental Protection has voted unanimously to adopt controversial new mining rules for the state. The legislature has twice rejected similar proposals and will have the final word on these as well. As Susan Sharon reports, the rules are under fire from environmental groups, tribal members, and others who say they're still not protective of public health or water quality and could leave taxpayers on the hook for hefty cleanup costs.
Staff at the Maine Department of Environmental Protection say the new rules are needed to address gaps and inconsistencies between existing rules and statutes. For months, they've been working to set up a review process for potential mining operations and to try to address public concerns along the way.
These are the most stringent that we've proposed. They are far more comprehensive, and they're certainly substantially more restrictive than the rules that are currently in effect for metallic mining in Maine.
Melanie Loisem is the deputy commissioner of the Maine DEP, who says the department appreciates the feedback it's received from the public. She says of the nearly 500 comments collected, only one person did not express outright opposition. Much of the concern is around the concept of financial assurance and a potential mining catastrophe. Critics say the rules don't go far enough to require mining operators to have substantial cash on hand to deal with related cleanup costs, and they fear taxpayers could get stuck with the bill. Nick Bennett is a staff scientist with the Natural Resources Council of Maine.
That's really important. It's just not fair to make Maine people clean up a mining disaster for a company that goes bankrupt. It's just not fair, and, you know, at the Natural Resources Council of Maine, we'll do everything we can to make sure that doesn't happen.
But Melanie Loisem of the DEP says the rules do require any permit applicant to cover any and all possible contamination that could result from their operations.
Given the scale of potential operations, that could be $150 million or significantly more than that.
Nick Bennett says the scale of the problem could amount to more like $500 million or even $1 billion to clean up, and that's why he thinks there's a problem. The proposed rules would allow metallic mining on state-owned public lands, in floodplains, and under Maine's lakes, rivers, streams, and coastal wetlands. And that's another big red flag for opponents.
My name is Jeff Reardon. I live in Manchester. I work for Trout Unlimited. Our primary concerns are the water quality and other impacts on fish habitat.
Metallic mining creates sulfuric acid, which runs off into ground and surface water and kills fish and other aquatic life. And open pit mining, which has been proposed by Canada-based J.D. Irving for Bald Mountain in Aroostook County, leaves large toxic acid ponds. In late November, thousands of migrating snow geese perished after they landed on one such pond in Butte, Montana. The 700-acre Berkeley Pit is the site of a former copper mine now submerged underwater. The proposed rules will now go before the legislature's Environment and Natural Resources Committee for consideration in the next several weeks. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Members of Maine's legislature appear to be losing their fight for public oversight of GOP Governor Paul LePage's plan to build a secure, privately run psychiatric unit. At the center of the issue are long waits facing Mainers seeking psychiatric beds. At a hearing today, mental health patients and their advocates called for details about the facility's long-term funding and why the administration wants an outside vendor to run it. The LePage administration this week withdrew an application to build the facility in Augusta, which would require approval from legislative leaders. LePage says the facility will be built in Bangor and says lawmakers calling for more details are just playing political games. The facility's already received local and administrative approvals and has support from several advocacy groups. After a five-month hiatus, Governor LePage says he's resuming his town hall meeting tour to drum up public support for his soon-to-be-released budget proposal and some other initiatives. The announcement on Portland radio station WGAN comes the day before the governor unveils the two-year spending plan. As Steve Missler reports, LePage is returning to a medium that has caused him troubles in the past.
The governor told WGAN that the forums are the most useful way to advocate for his policies. Doing so with lawmakers, he says, is pointless.
I'm not concerned about legislature anymore because, frankly, I'm beginning to believe they're relatively irrelevant. What they do is they play politics. We're working on policy.
The governor's return to the town hall is a natural, if not risky, move. LePage is comfortable speaking at the forums and engaging with the audience. The press, which he frequently criticizes, is allowed to attend, but is rarely permitted to ask questions. That's consistent with his infrequent interviews and press conferences. In fact, two of the three press conferences the governor did hold last year were called in response to controversial remarks he made at the town halls. A year ago, he made racially charged comments when he claimed black drug dealers were coming to Maine and impregnating white girls. He later held a press conference to blame the media for reporting the remarks. He then revisited and reiterated his comments about drug dealers at a forum held in August. When Democratic Representative Drew Gattein criticized the governor's statement, LePage left the lawmaker an obscenity-laced voicemail and later told reporters that he'd like to face the legislator in a duel. The governor did not hold another forum for the rest of the year. But now, LePage says he's ready to resume his roadshow of policy advocacy. He's already warned that his budget proposal will include big spending cuts and steps to shrink state government, which will likely be unpopular in a legislature divided between the Republican-led Senate and the Democrat-led House. LePage, however, says he prefers making his case with the public rather than dealing with lawmakers.
Going directly to the people and try to sell the Maine people and let the legislature play politics.
Still, in the end, it's the legislature that has the power to review, approve, and potentially change the governor's plan. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
L.L. Bean is expanding its manufacturing capacity to meet what the company says is an ever-increasing demand for its signature product. As Patty White reports, the increase in production of bean boots will add an additional 100 jobs by the end of the year between its Brunswick and Lewiston facilities.
Between its manufacturing facility in Brunswick and this one here in Lewiston, L.L. Bean churns out thousands of boots daily.
L.L. Bean produces about 3,000 pairs of boots per day.
And that number is expected to grow, says spokesman Mac McKeever, as more and more consumers clamor for the iconic footwear. A decade ago, L.L. Bean sold about 150,000 pairs per year. By 2015, it was up to 500,000. Next year, the company expects to sell more than 1 million.
These beautiful, quirky, functional, rugged boots have just really resonated with cross-generational folks, still the folks that work outdoors, the loggers, the farmers, the hunters, the anglers, but now they've garnered favor in the fashion community.
To increase its capacity, L.L. Bean is moving its Lewiston facility to a larger space within the city and is adding an additional injection molding machine like this one, which supervisor Donna Barabee explains is used to make the boots' rubber bottoms.
As the boots come off, the robot pulls the boots, drops it onto a conveyance, and it's fed to our two people that trim.
Within seconds of picking up the boot bottom from the conveyor belt, employee Diane Norman cuts the edges to make them clean and smooth, then hands it to Emily Johnson, who affixes the L.L. Bean label on the back heel. The manufacturing workforce is expected to grow with the increase in production, says Mac McKeever.
Between our Brunswick manufacturing facility and our Lewiston manufacturing facility, this year we're going to be hiring over 100 people to keep up with this surge in demand that we've realized.
The pay range will be between $12 and $17 an hour. The move to the new facility in Lewiston will take place in phases and will begin this spring. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And finally today, for 70 years, antibiotics have been used to combat deadly bacterial diseases in people and other animals. But too much of a good thing has led to some drug-resistant strains that are difficult to get rid of. As Jennifer Mitchell reports, FDA rules that took effect January 1st seek to address the problem, but they might create some headaches for backyard farmers.
The new U.S. Food and Drug Administration rules attempt to tackle the problem of drug-resistant microbes on one basic front, says Maine State veterinarian Michelle Walsh.
The idea is to take medically important antibiotics, and that's medically important in terms of human medicine, out of our food animals and you know, limit their use in animal agriculture in general.
Walsh says while Maine farmers were never big users of low-dose antibiotic feeds marketed for growth promotion, now illegal, some 300 products common around the farm will be affected. For example, the medicated formula used by dairy farmers to combat pneumonia in calves will no longer be available without a vet signature. While calling for the doctor instead of taking a ride to the feed store may cost more, most dairy farmers do regularly work with a vet. The same can't be said for keepers of other kinds of livestock.
There really isn't, at this time, any realistic veterinary care that's affordable to most backyard poultry keepers.
Gorham poultry farmer Stephen Bibula says with Maine's backyard chicken boom, he's routinely called in to fill a gap and help hobbyists diagnose and treat their flocks because no vet, small animal or large animal, will take their call.
These regulations are going to make it harder for us generally in the state to see healthy flocks being maintained.
And he says he expects to see a burgeoning black market for farm drugs if it becomes too difficult or too expensive to obtain them legally. But drug-resistant diseases are a problem. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, more than 2 million Americans will contract a drug-resistant disease this year, and more than 20,000 will die from it. Reducing the amount of antimicrobial agents in food, water, and the environment is an important step in reversing that trend, they say.
Myself and my colleagues in veterinary medicine certainly support that, and most of the producers that I know who produce food animals certainly support that as well.
But Maine State veterinarian Michelle Walsh says a lack of vets is a concern for certain species in certain areas of the state, Cumberland County being among them. But she says her office maintains a list of vets and resources and will help if possible. The rules also affect Maine's tiniest livestock, honeybees. Beekeepers needing to control a deadly bacterial outbreak such as foul brood in their hives will now need to seek a bee veterinarian before treating. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, January 5th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin, Mal Leary, and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.